Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Hope you're having a good Monday. Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. I would like to start today's program by reading a statement by a currently serving Mormon apostle by the name of M. Russell Ballard. Back in October of 1999, he gave a talk in General Conference titled "Beware of False Prophets and Teachers." You can find this statement that I'm about to cite in the Ensign, November 1999, page 64. This is what M. Russell Ballard had to say. Quoting, "False prophets and false teachers are also those who attempt to change the God-given and scripturally based doctrines that protect the sanctity of marriage, the divine nature of the family, and the essential doctrine of personal morality. They advocate a redefinition of morality to justify fornication, adultery, and homosexual relationships. We've been going through for several weeks now this book, Mormon Enigma, Emma Hale Smith. And if there's anything you take away from this book, certainly Joseph Smith, if this is a definition of a false prophet, he fits it. Now, not with the homosexual relationship things. That's a whole other issue. We're not discussing that. But when it comes to advocating a redefinition of morality to justify fornication and adultery, I think it's clear just from what we have read so far in this book that Joseph Smith certainly qualified.
Well, it's amazing when you talk to Latter-day Saints who do not know much about the polygamous ways of Joseph Smith, and when they find out what you're saying, they deny it initially. Many of them do. And then I like to ask, well, if this were true, would you be bothered by this? And many of them would be. And then later they find out, oftentimes they'll find out by the information I present, and they'll say, well, there must have been a reason for it, because they know Brigham Young. But sure, for Joseph Smith to have been involved like he was, and as we've been talking these past shows, this is a very deep problem, and it was from the very foundation of where this church lies, in the prophet himself, Joseph Smith, and that's where polygamy came from. It came from this one man.
Well, and he claimed to be a prophet, but if we're going to take M. Russell Ballard's definition, how can a sober-minded Latter-day Saint not see that Joseph Smith fits that definition that was given by M. Russell Ballard? I don't know how you can escape it. I was recently talking to a young man about this very issue. We were having a very good conversation. He was very intelligent, and he was sharp. I was really impressed with him. I commented many times on his ability to articulate his position and such. But when we were talking about Joseph Smith's polygamy, he insisted at the beginning of the conversation that Joseph Smith only had one wife, Emma. And you've heard that many times. I've heard that many times when you talk with many Latter-day Saints. Like you just said, they all know about Brigham Young, but they don't know about Joseph Smith. And when he said that wasn't true, and I always find that interesting, that it's always we're not telling the truth rather than, well, I never heard that, okay? Some Mormons answer that way, but most of the time it's, no, you're not telling the truth. Well, when I proceeded to tell him how I got this information and that I got it from Mormon historians. That's just where I'm reading it. We're reading it from people who are in the Mormon church. We're not reading it from outsiders. He was kind of surprised at that.
I had a recent conversation with a couple of ladies on that very issue, and they acknowledged that there were a few wives, but sexual relations weren't happening. And so I cited some sources from Mormon authors, Mormon historians, and I explained that, well, yeah, there actually was, according to these people. And the initial reaction was, well, they have a bent, and I'm not going to accept the historians. And I said, well, I mean, what kind of bent would they have? They would have a bent more not to show and put Joseph Smith in a better light by not showing that he actually was having these relations with the women. And they still would not accept, and they just rolled their eyes. And then I mentioned this book that we're going through, Mormon Enigma, and the one lady rolled her eyes and said, "We won't allow that junk in our house." So
wow.
We've talked about this book being written back in the 1980s and how it received an award from BYU. And then within a year, they're not allowing these women, these two authors, to be able to speak at the different wards because they felt that the information that was inside this book was damaging to the public relations cause of the Mormon Church.
Well, now we're getting to the point in the book, in chapter 8, it's titled In Search of Iniquity. Underneath it, it says spring through summer of 1842. What we are seeing here now is the Mormons have come into Nauvoo, Illinois, originally called Commerce, Illinois. They've kind of taken over the whole area. Joseph Smith has renamed it. Mormons are pouring into the area. It's becoming a huge city, and some have said that at the time it was comparable to the city of Chicago, but a lot of LDS people are moving into this area. And Smith, of course, is wielding the power over the LDS people. Now, they're going to be building a temple there. And, of course, this temple in Nauvoo was eventually, after the saints moved out, it was destroyed. A lot of the people took some of the rubble from the temple and used it for their homes in the local area. In fact, you can still find, from what I understand, some of the older homes having some of the stone from the original temple in Nauvoo. But this temple becomes very important for them. And so we're going to see in this particular chapter where the women want to get involved in this. And so Smith is going to form this women's auxiliary. But it's important that we read the first portion of chapter 8. And in the book, this is on page 106.
It says, "The women of Nauvoo look for ways to help build the temple. Sarah Melissa Granger had converted to Mormonism with her family in New York. She married Hiram Kimball, Heber C. Kimball's non-Mormon cousin, shortly after her arrival in Nauvoo. A plasterer and storekeeper by trade, he also had large land holdings in the city. As a well-to-do new bride, Sarah wanted to help build the temple. According to her own account, she and a friend, probably Margaret A. Cook, met in the Kimball living room and discussed ways to assist the temple project. These women recognized that some women had time but little means, others had money but little time. Sarah concluded to combine their efforts in a ladies' society. Several women met in her home and decided to organize formally, delegating Sarah Kimball to ask Eliza R. Snow to write a constitution and bylaws."
Okay, the Eliza R. Snow is Eliza Roxy Snow, who would become a plural wife of Joseph Smith.
And she's well known for the hymns that she wrote.
Absolutely. So we have at the bottom of this page, it says, on March 17th, 1842, one day after Joseph, quote, rose to the sublime degree, end quote, in Masonry. And that becomes important because Joseph Smith's involvement in Masonry is going to be the genesis for the Mormon Temple Endowment Ceremony. There's no question of that. You ask any Mason to watch the Temple Endowment Ceremony, and they will tell you that that is very, very close to what Masons had been doing for years. So anyway, Emma entered the lodge room with 19 other women. Joseph, John Taylor, and Willard Richards were also present. The first order of business was to signify by vote if all were satisfied with the character and reputation of each woman present. When the vote was positive, Emma introduced 7 additional names, bringing the official membership to 27. Joseph proposed that the sisters elect a president and 2 counselors and said, quote, he would ordain them to preside over the society and let them preside just as the presidency preside over the church. It goes on in the next paragraph to talk about Elizabeth Ann Whitney.
It said Elizabeth Ann Whitney moved that Emma be president. The support was unanimous. Emma then chose Elizabeth Ann and Sarah Cleveland, her friend from Quincy days, as counselors. Eliza R. Snow would be secretary and Elvira Cowles treasurer. Joseph read the elect lady revelation explaining that Emma, quote, was called an elect lady because she was elected to preside.
Now let's stop there because it's important to know who the players are. Mm-hmm. And I know some people listening to this broadcast, you know, we rattle off some of these names and because we're familiar with Mormon history,
right,
it makes sense to us. And I don't want to leave a lot of people in the dark. Elizabeth Ann Whitney was the wife of Newell K. Whitney, mm-hmm, who owned the store in Kirtland. when Joseph Smith arrives in Kirtland, he goes to the Newell K. Whitney store and tells Newell K. Whitney, "You are the man. Thou art the man." And apparently Newell was supposedly praying that Joseph Smith would go to Kirtland. So, but anyway, Elizabeth Ann Whitney moved with Emma to be president. The support was unanimous. And then Emma then chose Elizabeth Ann and Sarah Cleveland. And notice it says her friend from Quincy days. And a few broadcasts ago, we talked about that. What happened was, is after Joseph Smith was released from, or allowed to escape, if you will, from the Liberty Jail, he goes to Quincy, Illinois first, and he stays with the Clevelands. So, and remember, we said, be careful. Don't let Joseph Smith stay in your house, and certainly don't let your daughters work in the Smith home, because he will probably marry either your wife or your daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And here is one of those cases. He ends up eventually marrying Sarah Cleveland in June of 1842, about 3 months after the forming of the Women's Relief Society. And that's what we're talking about here. This society will become what's known as the Women's Relief Society. So you have Sarah Cleveland. And then as counselors, Eliza Roxy Snow. Eliza Roxy Snow would also marry Joseph Smith in June of 1842. And she would become the secretary. And then you mentioned Elvira Cowles, who would become treasurer. Smith would not marry her as a plural wife until June of 1843. What do I see taking place here? Now, call me skeptical, and I'm sure Mormons will say I've got a vicious mind in here, but it looks to me like Joseph Smith is pooling together all these women who are going to be his potential wives. He's putting them all in one little corral, if you will. It's not that he's going to marry every woman in the Relief Society, but he definitely has his eyes on some.
And tomorrow we'll talk a little bit more about how he used those women to be able to make marriage proposals to other women.
And I don't know if a lot of Mormons know this. And if this shocks you, all we're asking is go buy the book. Go buy this book and read it yourself. We are encouraging you to do so. And as you said, Eric, we're going to talk more about this Relief Society and Emma's involvement in it in tomorrow's broadcast.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. Here's something to think about. Are you confidently prepared to share your faith with your Latter-day Saint friend or acquaintance? Do you feel you have an adequate grasp of Mormon doctrine and history? Well, if not, then we encourage you to attend Mormonism Research Ministries' Compassionate Boldness Symposium coming up on Saturday, July 27th. This four-hour event will take place at the Adventure Church in Draper, Utah. MRM's Bill McKeever and Eric Johnson will focus on such issues, such as the Book of Mormon, the Godhead, and salvation. Special emphasis will be made on how to answer LDS proof texts and the questions Mormons may pose. Now again, the event is free and open to the public, so everyone is invited to come. For those who would like to do further research, a book table will also be available. This Compassionate Boldness Symposium will take place starting at 9 a.m. on Saturday, July 27th at the Adventure Church in Draper. Simply take the 123rd South exit off the I-15. The church is located right there at 352 West and 123rd South. We look forward to seeing you there.